Welcome to Bookish Podcast with Kath and Al, a podcast about books-ish. A quick disclaimer before we start, there may be some spoilers, so please save the episode for later if you don't want any. And also, please follow us on social at We Are Bookish Pod. We hope you enjoy.
Hello.
Hey, girl. Hey.
We're back.
We're back. It's 2023. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I actually haven't seen you yet in the new year. I saw you. Ellie and I had we have to talk about this. We had an evening where we watched the whole of The Flat Show on Paramount Plus.
We did.
On the 30th of December. And consequently, we were both, well, I was very hungover on New Year's Eve. Thanks, Lyle. Ellie got up at like 7 a.m. and went to a gym class.
I did.
And then me, like, literally, like, I like crawled to the nail salon at midday, like, Jesus Christ, how am I ever going to go out later?
I did. You texting me like, oh, I feel so bad. And I was just like, la, 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 la. I didn't deserve.
Maybe the workout is what you needed, though. Although I got on the bus at like 6 p.m. and I had to have a lie down when I got the other end.
it worked, kind of, you know, when you like sweat it out. So yeah. I felt a bit sick getting on the tube. And then I was like, this is a really bad idea. But I went to F45 and then I felt slightly better. And then when I went to go get my nails done, we were in a different room. Doesn't normally happen. But she put the like heating on, like, the air conditioning on, but it was hot heat. And you know when you're like, I was like, oh my god, I feel really sick. The hangover started to kick in. I was like, oh god.
Oh my god,
I didn't deserve to feel good. I didn't deserve to feel as good as I did that day or on New Year's Day, to be honest. But
New
the
Year's
amount
day,
that I drank
was disgusting. Fine until I was okay, like I felt a bit tired, whatever. And then I went for brunch and I ordered a shakshuka, which is actually just a terrible idea. And I never eat that on a hangover. It's like spicy and sweet. It's just really rich. And my tummy, I just felt really sick for like 4 hours after that. So I had a cheese toast and that sword. That's what you need on a hangover. Yeah, shakshuka. I mean, me too, but like not on a hangover. Lesson learned.
On New Year's. On New Year's Day, my friend's husband made us all breakfast, so that was like perfect.
That's nice.
Because we went down to Reading for New Year's because it's my mate's birthday, New Year's Eve. So we went to like a bar in Sonning, and then we went back to theirs afterwards, which was nice. So yeah, thank you, Jamie, for breakfast. It was great. All of us were very happy.
Yeah. Well. I mean,
but yes, we digress. The Flat Share on Paramount Plus,
really good.
Just can I just say, big up Richie and that casting, because he was just adorable.
He was the best casting, I think. Do you reckon?
And he was fantastic.
I think Leon was quite good as well.
Yeah, they did. They did really well with all of them, but I especially loved Richie and Leon. I really, really, really liked how they did that. And obviously they change the book slightly, which was fine. All of the changes they made sense.
Yeah.
In terms of like screen to book to screen.
Well, I feel like they have to make changes, don't they? Because otherwise, like, it doesn't translate very well. So I think it's fine. But I found Tiffy really annoying in this series. I think she is meant to be a little bit annoying, but like I just found her character really annoying. That's my only thing, I would say.
Yeah. Also, I feel like they underutilized like her friends a little bit, which was crap because they really were good about, you know, with Justin and that dynamic. They really were like better. They were better friends to her than I think they probably portrayed. Overall we really liked it, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's worth getting a 7-day trial for and then sack it off. Sorry,
yes.
Guys, but I just don't think there's anything else on there. However, I have a free trial of Apple TV at the moment, and it's It's great. It's really great. So I am really, really, really late to the party, but I'm watching Ted Lasso and it's really great. It's really wholesome. Like, I don't care about football either. Like, I thought, why would I want to watch a show about football? But it honestly, it's really, really worth it. And also there's a show called Trying, and it's about this couple who like try to have a kid, realize they can't. So go through the adoption process. And then it's all about that. And it's a comedy. It's got Rafe Spallin in it. Rafe Spall, you know, is that what his name is? Oh, he's like quite famous.
Who's that?
Because he was in To Kill a Mockingbird when I went to go and see it, right? And I was like to my dad, oh, I really recognise him. And my dad was like, yeah, because he's a really famous actor, Catherine. I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, I don't know him.
Hold on.
Oh, is that his dad? Oh, I know his dad.
Rafe Spall, yeah, he is in... Oh my god, he's from Camberwell. He's in like films like A Good Video and stuff. You'd recognise him.
No, you know who I recognise? His dad.
Right.
You know who his dad is?
Who?
His dad was in Harry Potter. His dad is the villain in he's not the villain in Enchanted, but he's the villain psychic in Enchanted. He's in Oh my god, he's in so much. His dad is literally
so
much.
It's really good. So I'd watch that as well. Oh, I know who he is. Yeah,
Oh, he's the rat.
He's the rat
in Harry Potter.
By the way. Wednesday. Have you seen it?
Pardon?
Have you seen Wednesday?
I haven't seen it yet, no. No.
It's quite good. It's kind of gave me Harry Potter vibes, to be honest. I wouldn't have watched it if I watched it with Tom. I wouldn't watch it otherwise, don't think. You know what I'm like? Rubbish at watching TV.
Yeah. I gave what I really wasn't doing much. I feel like I was away for a big chunk of November, and then when I came back, I then had like 2 weeks to like catch up with everybody. And then it was Christmas, so I was like, okay, well, in the 2 week period that we have downtime, I'm just going to catch up with stuff. So I watched The Traitors, and we both still like actually getting through it. Because it's the episodes are long, to be fair.
I think that's the problem. The like episodes are 10 too or 20 long. Minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. But the show is bloody brilliant. Just like, oh, so good.
I think you're just slightly further ahead than me, to be honest with you. I've just watched the episode when they bring the two people back. So I'm a bit further away than you. But the girl, Maddie, who keeps... The thing is, right, she knows what she's talking about, but not for the reasons that she thinks. Like, her reasonings are, like, really weird, but she's somehow right, and I'm like, what?
She's just like A plus, like it's just like A plus C plus D equals 4, and the answer is right, but the working out is totally incorrect. Like, it's so funny. And I love that she was like, oh, no, you haven't got there yet. But when she talks about her being an actress, she was just like, yeah, I was a homeless person on EastEnders. She kept me up, love, and she was really reeling off what her acting credits were. And I really hope that they will just cast her in EastEnders after this, because she deserves it. I really like them all.
Yeah, you know what you said about like editing and shows and stuff? I feel like they've given her a lot of screen time and like made her sound like she's just on about her opinion all the time, which is really funny, but maybe she's not actually doing that, but it's just funny.
But she does wind me up a little bit though with it though, because I know she's right, like she's right about Wilf, absolutely. But I'm just like, oh God, give it a rest. Like, because when Aaron was like ran out of the room and he was crying and he was having that like anxiety attack, I just felt for him.
I did, poor boy, and then she went in on him.
Yeah, and then it was like, why is he behaving like that? He's a traitor. And it's like, Maddie, relax, please.
He's got this thing called anxiety.
That was her music. It just made me laugh, because then she was like, yeah, that's it, they're traitors, because why would Wilf react that way to him having an attack like that? Like, and it's just like, he can't control how someone's going to react, like he can't. And he was already, when you watch it, you can see he was already getting quite upset before even they got to Wilf. So it was a bit like, okay, relax, Maddie. But the relax. Three traitors, very good. Amanda, very good.
Amanda is excellent.
Like, in terms of just, she's so good.
However, I've just watched, actually, the bit that I've literally just watched is when Will throws Alyssa under the bus. And when I was watching that, I was like,
okay, so you do know.
Shit.
You do know. Okay, you do know, yeah. That was bad. I mean, I get it. I totally understand why he did it. They did need to find a traitor at that point. And it, yeah. It was always going to be more likely that they were gone for her than Will.
Yeah. But then when Maddie's then like, well, if Alyssa's a traitor, then Will's not one. I mean, I don't know what she says after that, but that's what she says in that episode. And I'm like, what? How? What's the logic there? It's possible for them to both be traitors.
Yeah. And that's what's so great about it, because people really dismiss, like, different characteristics as being, like, an obvious traitor characteristics or not. I think what they got Alyssa on was very true. I think she buckled under the pressure. She probably did think being quiet was probably going to save her, but it didn't quite.
The way she was like, I don't hang out with adults normally. Yeah. Like, that's not going to work, babe, because you literally are an adult.
Yeah. It's really interesting, the different, like, what Wilf and Amanda and how Alyssa all attacked being a traitor. I'm telling you now, if I ever went on that programme, I couldn't be one, because I wear my heart on my sleeve. You just know.
No, so.
I'd be an Alyssa.
I can't lie.
Fuck it, I'm a traitor.
I tell you what's actually, what's quite funny is my brother, when he lies, he's like, not like lies, but like in a game, right? He'll be like, he'll just have this little smirk. And I'm just like, I know you're lying. So I can literally see like the corner of his mouth is like going up. I'm like, I literally know that you're lying. So imagine him on the game just being like, I smiled.
He just stop smirking. He'd have to be like this, holding his, like, because for the listeners out there, I'm holding the corner of my lip down so I don't smirk. No, I don't think I'd buckle under the pressure. I'd just be like, what do you want me to say? I'm not a traitor. I can't prove it any other way. Oh, fuck it, I'm a traitor. I just can't do this anymore. Just kick me out.
You know what, though? Because this is a bit like The Mole, because we watched The Mole on Netflix as well.
Yes, and we said we were going to talk about that.
Yeah, and then we never did. But The Mole was different. I think...
Yes.
The Mole... I think The Traitors is better because it's, like, funny British people. And, like, it's just so...
Yeah.
Like, it's, like, really, like, authentic and stuff. But I think The Mole was a better show because I don't see the point in the, like, games that they play to get the money, because the traitors, I know they're both trying to win the money, but in the mole is trying to sabotage the money the whole time. Yeah. And I think that works better as, like, a premise.
I like that.
Why are they, like, playing these games? There's no, like, in The Mole, they're playing the games because... They're trying to work out who's trying to sabotage the game, because then they'll get less money and then the more wins, kind of thing. So,
yeah, I like that. I think the only thing I would say to that point, because I do agree with you, I like that in The Mole that the mole was actually sabotaging the game. But I think the traitors goes on, it gets so much more intense in that boardroom. They almost need those team activities to bring them together, because they literally rip each other apart. That's the only thing. But I also, what I liked about The Mole was we didn't know who the moles were, so it was like you were in on the guessing game too. And I kind of wish that had happened with the traitors, but I do like seeing how they decide they're going to play the game and then buckling under the pressure, or how they're coping with it. But I also do like the element of the mole where it's like, I don't know who the mole is, I'm really trying to figure it out, and having being part of that guessing game too. So I wonder if they could figure that out somehow. But you know, they're going to do a celebrity one apparently, and then that ruins everything. As soon as they bring celebrities in, it just ruins everything.
They've actually done one series, can't they just do another one with normal people?
Yeah, just someone on Twitter was like, I want them to do a second season but bring the same people back again and change who the traitors were. Change the traitors, because their relation Oh, that bit with the magician when he was like, I can read people, I do it for a living, and he totally picked up people.
Oh my god, the fact that he's with that girl though, and she's just like, she, no, but it's so funny because in the first episode when that guy Matt is like in love with Alex, and then he's like, and I literally texted him, and I was like, this guy thinks he's on Love Island. My brother walks in the room and he's like, oh, this guy thinks he's on Love Island, and I was like, I just said that. But I was like, wrong show, buddy. And then she's like stringing him along, basically, because she can't tell him, oh, I've got a boyfriend and he's here. And then when he finds out that they're together, and he's like so upset, as if she's like dumped him or something, I'm like, I'm so confused. She literally walks in the room and he's like, oh my god, she's amazing, I need her.
It's just wild, isn't it? It's like, God, like, I wonder how like intimate and intense that whole living situation is, that he was like so in love with her.
Yeah, although I think he's just quite like, oh my god, this girl is beautiful and she's talking young to me. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Funny.
Oh god, great,
I will
show.
Finish it. I think it's just like, yeah, I will finish it, but it's just quite long. There's like 12, there's 12 episodes of an hour long. That's 12 hours. That's quite a lot.
It could easily be 40 minutes and they could just cut some of the shit.
Also,
big shout out to Claudia Winkleman, the Winx.
Oh, yeah. Our gal. The Winx.
Our gal, Claudia Winkleman.
We have
the Winkleman. She's brilliant in this. This is definitely her show. Yeah,
I did get to relive telling the story to my brother though, because I watched a few episodes at home basically.
Please do.
And I was like, I've met her. He was like, what? And I was like, yeah, at lunch. Me and Ellie just went and got makeup done by her. And he was like, what? So I like dug out the picture and I was like, look, that's me and Claudia Winkleman. He was like, I'm so confused. How did that happen?
We should post it. I know we did like on a story. I think we've definitely got one where she's actually doing my makeup. So
we've got one of us doing the makeup and then one of us three. But I look awful in it. But it's funny.
I mean, the only person that can wear Claudia Winkleman's makeup is Claudia Winkleman. In like,
I
it's
love
meant
her.
For her.
I'm actually obsessed with her.
She's brilliant. She's fantastic. I love her so much. Like, big shout out to Claudia Winkleman. You're absolute legend.
Yeah. Agreed.
Great show. Anything else you did, read, watched over the Christmas period?
Well, I read Stanley Tucci's book, Taste, which was great. Love it. Oh, loved it.
Tucci,
I love him
gang.
Now. But I didn't realise he's
gang,
like...
Tucci gang, Tucci gang, Tucci gang, Tucci gang, Tucci gang, Tucci gang.
You know, he has like 5 kids. I'm like...
He's that guy from The Hunger Games.
But anyway, I
he's
love
a
him
fantastic
now.
Man.
Yeah. And yeah, he's great. So I read that and I would thoroughly recommend it. And then I read Meet Me Under the Mistletoe, which is a festive read.
Ah, yeah.
It's quite good, actually. By Jenny Bayliss. It was a nice little festive read, basically.
Gets you into the spirit of Christmas, is exactly what we needed in the lead up to it. So
yeah.
I mean, I know Christmas is done now, but I did see that Netflix was dropping a Christmas movie in January. So if you don't take down your Christmas, if you're one of those people that doesn't take down their Christmas decorations and you still enjoy Christmas 365 days of the year, then I highly recommend that you read this book.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, or just save it for next Christmas. Buy it now, read it next Christmas. Because that's about how long it takes me to read a book that I buy anyway. Because I just buy books. Buying books and reading books are different hobbies anyway. So, oh my god, Ellie, my bloody Waterstones order. Of course. Is when I went for my lunchtime walk. I literally walked past
it came,
and I was like, I bet he's got my parcel. Got home, had a bloody slip in the door, didn't I?
No.
Got three lovely books.
What's in your
coming.
Christmas? What did you order?
I bought Lessons in Chemistry. Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, which you also bought me. Love you. But I need to send that one back. And oh my God, I can't remember what it's called. Like the Seven Moons or something. Oh, what's it called?
Oh, I know which one.
You know, it's got like a really colourful cover.
Cover. The cover's beautiful.
Yeah, it is actually so lush. Okay, here we go. The Seven Moons of Marley Almeida is the other one I got. So that's meant to be really good.
I've got a whole stack of Audible credits that I haven't used, and Audible sent me an email reminding me that I should use it before it expires. So
they expire?
Because you think you're only allowed six, aren't you? Yeah, you're only allowed to keep six. And if you get to six, then they'll just take one away. So I was like, right, well, let me use them, otherwise it's wasted. I've paid for the book, right? So I pre-ordered Spare, Prince Harry's one, that's coming out next week. I will also buy it because I've got to support my boy. And and then I will. Harry till I die. No, joking. And then I no, yeah, I am. Yeah, sorry. I'm sorry. I won't go into it, but yeah, sorry. I'm backing Harry. That's my horse in this race. Fight me on it. Don't care. I'll ignore you. Come at me with it. Ignore you.
Come at me.
But Harry all the way. Anyway, come at me. Come at me, but don't expect a response. And then I ordered Hercule Poirot's Christmas. Because, you know, Christmas books in January, as we said, so.
Love it.
Yeah,
love,
and that's for book club, actually. Yeah, so there you go. I told you can read Christmas books in January, so do that, and then do Meet Me Under the Mistletoe, because it's a cute little rom-com.
Love it.
If we hadn't said that already.
But today, we're going to talk about the book, and I'm just going to call it the book, because it's just great. Ellie bought me this for Christmas last year, and I have to say it did take me quite a long time to read it. See, I read it in October, and Ellie was a bit like, oh, read it yet? But I read it, and it's funny because I read it. I went to Amsterdam with Tom, and I read it on the train, and I basically told Tom not to speak to me for 4 hours because I wanted to read the book, and I read the book for 4 hours, and he got really bored, and he kept being like, are you still reading? And I was just like, yes, it's a really good book. Leave me alone. But it literally best, like 5 stars, probably best book I read last year.
Up there. It's that, and I've read like Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, but this one I think probably pips it. It was beautiful. So that and Sorrow and Bliss as well. But The Island of Missing Trees is honestly one of the most beautiful books I've read. It was the best one I'd read in of last year, for sure. Mm. So thank you to BookBar for that recommendation, because that's why I bought it for you. I said to them that my friend loves love. Like, she is a romantic. And so please give me a book that will speak to her in this way. And they suggested this.
There you go. And yeah, I mean, it was great. I really loved it. I mean, basically, we were just saying, like, just now when we're doing our little pre-recording chat, that there's like, we've both like marked loads of pages in it because there's just loads of stuff in it that you're just like, oh my God, how did they come up with that? So like, yeah, I don't know if you want to pick out a couple of bits that you really liked.
What I will say is, while I'm trying to look at it all, so I grew up in North London, and in the area of North London I grew up, there are a lot of Turkish Cypriot or Greek Cypriot people, like a community. And so the discussion about like the Turkish Greek Cypriot wars, something I've heard, but never something that's been like properly explained to me until I read this to understand how it started. And obviously, like, this only gives you like a brief rundown of that in its basis terms, but it was sort of nice to get that history, because again, it's only something that's only really been spoken about, and that's been by the generations after after it, if that makes sense. So people like my generation who knew about it but didn't know about it a lot, like Ada, I guess, in that way. So it was cool to have had some background or some insight into what actually happened. And surprise, surprise, the British. But you know, I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite like, it is one of those things that like that everyone knows about but doesn't really know about. And it like, I feel like made me want to like learn more about the history and stuff. I remember when I was doing my master's, my dissertation tutor was from Cyprus, and she did a lecture on the words. So she photographed loads of stuff in the like border bit in Nicosia, so like in like between the Turkish bit and the Greek bit, and like all the language and stuff, and like talked about like all the different languages they saw, and like, yeah, it was just really, really like fascinating to learn about like this city that's like split in two, and the like what you can learn from the language and stuff there. So that was really interesting. So I guess it was like, I hadn't really thought that much. Like when I started reading the book, I thought about that lecture, and I was like, actually, that lecture did stay with me at the time, because I don't feel like I remember that many of my lectures at uni, like not in that much detail. Do you know what I mean?
I think maybe she does a really good job about like bringing, so the it's told with different narrative perspectives. One of them is the fig tree, and at first I guess like you, because you found it quite jarring at first. I didn't, because you'd already told me about it, so I knew to expect it.
When I first started reading, I was like, what the hell? Like, you start reading it, okay, and you're like, wow, this is really beautiful. And then you're like, and then there's like a narrative, blah, blah, blah. And then you're like listening to it, and you're like, cool. And then suddenly you're like, it's a tree. The narrator is a tree. And you're like, what the hell is going on here? I literally was so like, I was like, nah, I'm sorry. Like, I don't know if I can get on board with this. Let me tell you, if you feel the same, you definitely, definitely can get on board with it. Because you just fall in love with the tree.
Yeah.
The tree is also in love with the husband.
Costas.
Yeah. So, but then you find out why. But it's beautiful.
It works so well because she uses, like, lots of metaphors to just, I guess, to describe humanity and immigration and emigration and like and family and community and war, and how, and she uses trees and different species and stuff like that to talk about it, but then also in using them as metaphors, it's also like, but actually we are all dependent on each other, we're all organisms in the same ecosystem, we very much rely on one another to survive. And so there's this whole it was so beautifully done with the fig tree, because then you get the perspective of being in Cyprus, like they say that like trees remember or whatever, so when Costas left and he took like the twig from the fig tree in Cyprus and he planted it in London, that the new tree in London had a memory of its life in Cyprus, but it was like its own it was its own person. And it's kind of like having a child, right? I guess in that way, like the trauma still lives within this tree in London, but it's different. And I guess that's the same with Ada and her parents. They don't talk about what happened in Cyprus. Yes, absolutely. And they don't talk about what happened in Cyprus. They make a very they make a point of not doing it, but the trauma still manifests itself in different ways in the way that Daphne copes with life. essentially. Mm.
Yeah.
In comparison to Costas. And it was just, I think there's a, I can find the quote where they talk about, but where they're, so this is the fig tree talking.
Mm.
In the page before, they talk about how things, or I can't remember what they talked about the page before, but they say, where there is trauma, look for signs, for there are always signs. Cracks that appear in our trunks, splits that won't heal, leaves that display autumn colours in spring, bark that peels like unmolted skin. But no matter what kind of trouble it may be going through, a tree always, knows that it's linked to endless life forms. Mm. From the honey fungus, the largest living thing, down to the smallest bacteria. And that's, its existence is not even an isolated happenstance, but intrinsic to a wider community. Even trees of different species show solidarity with one another, regardless of their differences, which is more than you can say for so many humans, which I think you can see play out in real life, like right now. So,
yeah.
It just, the role of the fig tree in this book is so important.
Yeah.
To this novel. And without it just doesn't work.
No, I agree. And even like on the first page, you're talking about like maps and stuff, like the fig tree is talking, but like this bit, we both marked this. Literally on the first page, we marked it. I mean, come on now.
Yeah.
And it's like, a map is a two-dimensional representation with arbitrary symbols and incised lines that decide who is to be our enemy and who is to be our friend, who deserves our love and who deserves our hatred, and who our share of difference. Cartography is another name for stories told by winners, for stories told by those who have lost. There isn't one. And then there's like a little break, and then it's like, here's how I remember it. And then it goes into the story. Amazing. Love it. Love it. And even like, and it runs through like all the themes in the book as well. Cause like, I think we were saying like, there is a theme of mental health as well through like generational trauma, but also the mother's mental health throughout the book as well. And we say like, it's very done very, very differently to Sorrow and Bliss, which is like what a book that we recently talked about mental health. But still done very, very well, I think. So like, for example, this has been, it's like the tree was being strangled by its own roots. Because it was happening under the earth, it was undetectable. If the encircling roots are not found in this time, they start putting pressure on the tree and it just becomes too much to bear. And it's just like, I mean, that's just beautiful, isn't it? Really sad, but really, really beautiful. And it's like, and I'd like to believe with mine too, but underneath something was strangling her, the past, the memories, the roots.
I like the stuff about, because she's talking about most arboreal suffering is caused by humankind, and just like our lack, there's a lot of climate stuff in this too, actually, which I wasn't sort of like expecting. But maybe just like, well, no species is obliged to like another species, that's for sure. But if you're going to claim, as humans do, to be superior to all life forms, past and present, then you must gain an understanding of the oldest living organisms on Earth, who were here long before you arrived and will still be here after you have gone.
Mm.
It's just like, which we don't. I don't think we do respect nature and what it can teach us.
No.
At all.
No, and there's it's
so those parts were great as well.
Yeah, and like even like the metaphors with like the butterflies and the ants and stuff. There's a whole like page about ants.
Yeah,
like, ants are so cool, aren't they?
The butterflies was like really important because they talked about the migration of them and how things can change to alter the path of their migration. And actually, it was really important to the story. I can't remember now. It was, where did you find that?
Throughout the novel, this is on like a reading group guide. It says, throughout the novel, butterflies appear as a recurring symbol. Butterflies are engraved on the box that Costas gives Daphne as a token of his love. Ada doodles them absentmindedly before her screaming spell, and it's just a butterfly who discovers the grave of Daphne and Costas' baby during a mass migration to Cyprus. I think it's like kind of like the butterfly is there at every point. But it's obviously like marking its journey and stuff, and like how like one thing could be different and stuff, and like the evolution of the butterfly as well, because they like
flourished, don't they?
So so we see the political landscape changing in Cyprus when Kostas and Daphne meet each other at first. It's already difficult for them to be lovers anyway, because one is Turkish and one is Greek. But as time goes on, that becomes even more difficult. They are helped by Yusuf and Yorgos. I probably said that wrong, so apologies. Who are also lovers, but they happen to be gay in 1970s Cyprus, which is like totally not a thing at the time. And so they meet at the Happy Fig, which is the bar that these two gentlemen own. And they conceal their love there. They go into like a back room or something like that. But it isn't until there's this like one night where there's like an attack on the bar that Daphne and Kostas like have a night of passion, or like make love, or whatever you want to call it, or have sex. And in that, a few days later, Kostas goes to the UK, goes to England, sent by his mother, and we find out that Daphne actually fell pregnant.
But we don't find that out for ages.
No, we don't.
Like the structure of the book, but you kind of expect their love story to be like linear and just like keep going, but it doesn't. There's like a massive break in it, and then all this like, yeah, and then you find out like the stuff about the fact that she was pregnant and stuff, and he didn't know, and she couldn't get hold of him. Just, oh god, so intense and like really like, yeah.
It was so, and then so much life has been lived in that. So they met when they were 17 or 18 and they don't reunite until they're 40. So much has been lived, so much has been unsaid in that time. And it's really sweet that Kostas was just like, I'm going to take one last chance, because he has never forgotten her, to see whether it can be rekindled. And, you know, it is, but he has to... You know, he left. He didn't know what he left behind. She had to stay and sort of witness, like, that island fall apart.
Yeah.
He didn't go through that. So his trauma is also different from hers, in a sense. Because
yeah, and she's quite angry with him for that, isn't she? In the sense of, like, she's like, you were safe. Like, you were away from it. You didn't witness all of this. You didn't witness all of these people die, well as, like, I did. And then she is basically... doing this work of like reuniting people with their families and stuff, which is just like, just so like, just must be so hard.
There's a lot of opposition to that work as well, wasn't there, from people when they were asking them, because it was like they're going to try and find as many of the as many bodies as they can so they can have proper burials, but I think a lot of people felt like it was stoking the flames in one sense or another, and it should be left alone, or some people are still raw for some generations. And then you learn about her having this child, and she named it after Yorgos and Yusuf, which was really sweet. Yeah. And they have a horrible end as well, actually. They meet their an untimely end to their love story. But also there was something sort of like they were together.
Yeah.
You know, when the two bodies were, like, you learn about their death in the very beginning, and their two bodies are found in a well. It's a homophobic attack on them, in protecting her, actually, and the doctor when she was having this like abortion. And oh, it was just awful. And then the fig tree, oh my god, when they were talking about the fig tree, was talking about the parrot and how the parrot got really distressed because they weren't there.
Oh my god, that broke my heart. Oh my god, it is such a heartbreaking novel. There's so much in it that just destroy you. Don't read it if you need something heartwarming. It is heartwarming as well. Like, there are bits in it that are like really like, oh my god, yes. Like, but then it's so much of it is so traumatic and like, yeah, it's just such a beautiful, heartbreaking novel.
It is. And like in the bit towards the end, so after obviously Yorgos and Yusuf and Yorgos. Sorry if it's wrong. Apologies again. after a time when the happy fig tree goes derelict and the fig tree starts like what is it like they get pests start going at the tree and stuff like that. There's a mouse that visits the fig tree. She's a her. Oh my god, they have this whole bit where they talk about trees being women or men or male or female or whatever, which was really interesting. But she is a she, and this mouse comes to visit, and it just made me really sad because you know how we were talking about how the two were found at the bottom of the well and they were together. So this mouse comes to visit, and I'll go from here. It's on page 307. After sharing all of this with me and gorging on my figs, the mouse went on his way. I did not see him again, but before leaving, he mentioned that the last book he had munched his way through had been by someone named Ovid. He had enjoyed his words, and of the thousands of lines he had come across, there was one in particular that had stayed with him. Someday this pain will be useful to you. I hoped he was right, and that one day, not too far in the future, all this pain would be useful to the future generations born on the island, to the grandchildren of those who had lived through the troubles. If you go to Cyprus today, you can still find the tombstones of Greek widows and Turkish widows engraved in different alphabets, but with a similar plea. If you find my husband, please bury him next to me. And so I thought that was really poignant that Yusuf and Yorgos were together when they died, because lots of people weren't with their loved ones, and she does find them in the end. Does find their bodies. I can't remember how that happened, but I think she makes a decision not to tell the families because ultimately they would want to be with each other in the end. And so I just thought that was quite beautiful.
Yeah,
there's so much to this book. There's so much we haven't really touched on or gone into quite into depth with, just because we could be here all day, and it's quite nuanced. But
yeah, I would just say read it, to be honest. That would be my advice. Like, it's definitely worth reading. I kind of wish it had won the Women's Prize, I'm not gonna lie. I have read
you've read the winner and you've read quite a few of the shortlists, haven't you?
Only one more than you, because the only one you haven't read is The Winner, because I've read Sorrow and Bliss, The Island Missing in Trees, which you've read both of, and then I read The Book of Form and Emptiness as well, which is good, like it is a good book, but I would say this is like another level, to be honest. But I don't know, I guess it depends on what they're judging.
I would say it's a really strong, of the two that I've read on the shortlist, it's a really strong shortlist. I do have Great Circle, and I do have The Book of Form and Emptiness, and I have something from the long list, which I purchased the other day, The Final Revival of Opal and Nev. So I think I'll make my way. It is structured a bit like Daisy Jones and the Six, but if you could imagine it as like once it's... it's like a black punk artist.
Which one's that? Sorry.
So it's the Final Revival of Opal and Nev.
Okay.
Opal Jewel is a fiercely independent young woman who knows she can be a star, a black punk artist before her time. When the British singer-songwriter Neville Charles discovers her one night, she takes him up on his offer to make rock music together. In early 70s New York City, Opal and Nev are the cusp of stardom, but when violence breaks out at one of their concerts, Opal's bold protest sets off a chain of events that changes their lives forever. Decades later, as Opal considers a reunion with Nev, music journalist S. Sonny Shelton seizes the chance to curate an all history about her idols. Sunny thought she knew most of the stories surrounding the cult duo, but as the interview digs deeper, a new allegation threatens everything.
That sounds good. Let me know what it's like.
Do.
We've also read Careless, don't forget. Careless,
that was
you?
That too. Well, you did. No, because the subject content was a bit more stuff that was going on.
But that's also a very good novel.
It was I think it's been, I think it was a good shortlist. I didn't read much of the shortlist last year, but the only thing that really stood out to me was The Vanishing Half. So
you read
the winner.
Oh no, I haven't completed the shortlist.
How does it compare?
Nearly completed the shortlist. I don't know what I'm on about. I read Piranesi though. Piranesi's great. Loved it. But I still need to it's a bit embarrassing. I've still got all those books. I need to read them. Oh, I've got so many books to read. Do you know what I'm gonna do? This year I'm gonna read the shortlist. No, I'm gonna read it. Score this year.
This is our pledge to you. Kath will read the shortlist and I will read one more than I did last year.
Okay, actually, maybe
I will try and read the shortlist too.
It doesn't give you much time. The shortlist is announced on the 26th of April and the winner is announced on the 14th of June. That is not enough time.
What, this year?
Yeah, so long list is 7th of March, shortlist is 26th of April, and then the winner is on the 14th of June. So you literally have like 6 weeks.
So you basically would need to make you'd need to start from the long list and just hope that you pick a lot of the short list.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would actually.
Which is what you kind of did the first time, but then you ended up reading more of the long list. You read the long list books rather than the short list books.
Yeah, I did, didn't I? Yeah, because in 2021, I read 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of the long list, but only 1, 2, 3 of the short list. I have the other three books. I really need to read them.
It's funny. It's just pot luck. You end up going for the ones that you want to read, as opposed to like maybe like it's just that it's a pot luck. It really is.
Which is what you should do. Like for example, like The Great Circle doesn't really appeal to me, to be honest. But maybe if you read it and you like it, I might be tempted.
No. I only bought it because it was £4.50 in Sainsbury's. No. And I was like, I'll take that. And it was a paperback.
Maybe
I'll get around to it, but it's quite a long book. Yeah. Paperback.
So, I reckon Tomorrow and Tomorrow long, and Tomorrow so might be like... on it, you know.
Ah.
Yeah.
In which case, we're ahead for once.
Maybe. Yeah.
But once we're ahead.
But anyway.
What's your goal for reading this year?
52.
What's your goal for reading this year? It's 2023. 52.
Yeah. I did.
I've set mine low again.
Yeah. See, I did that last year and then I just decided to up it again and then I was like behind and it was really stupid. But I was like, yeah, I'm going to read those in January. And it's like the 4th of January and I've read like 30 pages. So I better get a bloody move on, to be honest. but yeah. What, have you got anything that you're aiming for?
I'm close to... I mean, I set mine low. I set it to 15 last year. That was a good shout because last year was shit. And I read 12, so it was more of like I read a book a month type thing, which is fine. But I probably will read more this year. And actually, I'm almost finished with Magpie because I can't put that book down. Bloody hell. But it's like, it's an easy thriller. Really easy. Like, so I'm very happy to have picked it up. And that might be an episode coming to you soon. Hopefully. And then you lent me Heatwave, which is also another weird one, but
I reckon that would be a
good
put
down because I was just like, why did you just watch it and why are you making these decisions?
I reckon it will get studied at school, that book. Actually, that book I bought, went to get a present for my dad and the guy in Waterstones was like, are you looking for something else? And I was like, not really. And he was like, well, this book's a really good book. And that's basically all he said. And I was like, okay. And I just bought it. That is all it took. For some guy, random bookseller, like, you should buy this. And I was like, okay. And I bought it. So,
and then you bought it. Easy peasy. So yeah, we've got a lot going. I feel better about it though, because I think I finally finished Sorrow and Bliss, and also after finishing, because obviously I was only a little bit way, no, I was like halfway through. So my thoughts haven't changed that much, but obviously there's stuff that I missed when we did the episode. So I finished that, and then I finished The Island of Missing Treats, and I've just been on a bit of a roll, so I'm going to go with it.
Go with it. But yes, anyway.
Go roll.
I'm going to go and watch an episode of The Traitors and go to sleep.
I'm going to go eat a very late dinner.
Oh, lovely. Standard lovely. For you.
Right, okay. Well, standard for me. I wouldn't actually at night, I wouldn't eat this late. But it just is how things worked out. So it's fine.
Okay, darling. Well, I'll speak to you very soon.
Bye. Love you. Bye. Bye.
Love you. Bye.
And that's the app. If you like the episode, please leave us a lovely review, subscribe and share with your friends, and we'll love you forever. Follow us on socials at We Are Bookish Pod. Thanks for listening.